Amid a national opioid epidemic, many are questioning why heroin is so plentiful and so inexpensive. Our next guest says much of that can be attributed to a small area of Mexico where residents have created what he calls a retail delivery system for heroin. This, he says, is not the work of major drug cartels, but it's an informal system that's operating in many small and mid-sized cities around the country, including some in Massachusetts. Journalist Sam Quinones' latest book says this system for selling heroin was helped by the aggressive marketing of prescription painkillers, fueled in part by a letter that was written by a Boston University doctor decades ago. We started by asking Quinones how he determined that much of the U.S. heroin is not from Afghanistan or Asia, but from Latin America.
Heroin is a commodity, and it obeys basic rules of business and economics. Heroin is cheap because it comes from close by nowadays. That's why it's cheaper than it's ever been in our history, really. It comes from Mexico and Colombia. They have been able to outcompete, basically, Afghani or Turkish or Burmese heroin. And for the last 30 years, almost all of our heroin has been coming from Latin America. Remember, of course, that there are very sophisticated trafficking groups who know how to cross the border very easily.
So let's talk about them for a minute. Your book describes this sort of loose network of Mexican men from a town called Jalisco. And you say this group is responsible for much of the heroin supply in the U.S. and really for heroin's resurgence on the East Coast since the late 90s. Can you talk a little bit about them?
Sure. This is really how I came to this story. I discovered a story of in Columbus, Ohio, of how they had traffickers selling heroin for the first time, brought by Mexican guys who had a specific way of selling it. The great innovation of these guys is their sales method. They have learned how to sell heroin retail by the tenth of a gram as if it were pizza. They have this delivery system where the addict will call an operator standing by to take their order. The operator then contacts one of several drivers in Columbus. These drivers are driving from 7 in the morning to 7 at night, their mouths packed with little balloons filled with tenth of a gram doses of heroin. They then take the order and drive to where the addict might be meeting them. It's a system that has evolved, has improved with technology. They now use cell phones. They don't use guns. They're all about customer service. They have taken this system almost nationwide. Numerous cities that are all similar.
Your book says that there was a rumor among some of the folks in Jalisco that states that were commonwealths, like the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, had lenient drug laws. And you say that several Jalisco drivers were arrested in Weymouth, Massachusetts. Well, when did that happen? And do you know if that was the start also of black tar heroin coming to Massachusetts?
I do know that people in the town of Jalisco have told me that there is a rumor. It is a fairly virgin market in the sense that there isn't really the intensely potent black tar heroin there. I don't believe that in Massachusetts they have among the heroin dealers, the intense focus on customer service and delivery that these guys offer. This may have been what attracted them to the state, but also they are always looking for new states because they don't compete with other dealers as much as they compete with each other.
I'm wondering if you know at all why it was Weymouth where we first heard of the Jalisco drivers.
I do not, but their MO is to use addicts as their explorers. So I would have bet that in some other town in America, a guy told them, say, I'm from Weymouth, Massachusetts, and I know a bunch of addicts up there. I could take you there. And you would have a huge market if you went there. And remember, these guys don't know America at all. They don't come to know America. They just want to make money and go back home and be kings back home. And so if they get to a new market, it's almost always because someone else led them there.
You know, your book talks about the Jalisco coming in and recognizing that this sort of retail way of selling heroin could be very profitable in the U.S. But one of the things that was also happening at the time, and one of the reasons why it was profitable, was because of what was going on with painkillers and OxyContin, the widespread marketing of OxyContin to doctors. And a lot of this in your book you talk about, which I found really fascinating, was based on research from a Boston University medical school professor named Herschel Jick.
Well, I would hesitate to call it research. Herschel Jick has a database of hospital records, patients who have spent time in hospitals. And in 1979, this database was about 300,000 records strong. He got used to kind of asking questions of this database, particularly when it came to drugs and how patients reacted to drugs while in the hospital. One question one day he asks is, how many people were prescribed narcotic painkillers while in hospital? And how many of those got addicted? And he comes up with 11,000, and four of those got addicted. He writes a letter to the New England Journal of Medicine, a letter to the editor, 101 words long, saying, hey, I just found this. This is interesting. Just FYI. That's all it was. As it happens, a few years later, pain specialists in America are increasingly agitating for a far greater role for opiate painkillers in the treatment of pain. Convincing people that these pills would not addict pain patients was a huge hurdle. They begin to look around for evidence and they find none. Zero. What they do find is a few little pieces of writing, the main one being this 100-word letter to the editor. They fasten on that as proof. This letter is picked up and run with by all these opiate proponents, pain specialists. Virtually non-addicted was the buzz phrase. They also used the term less than 1% of all patients get addicted. The only place where you find that figure is in all of medical literature is in that 101-word letter that Herschel Gick wrote to the New England Journal of Medicine. Nowhere else does that appear, and people have really disowned that idea. This is a classic example of where the private sector has created a problem, has recouped all the profits, and all the costs fall to the public sector. Huh. That's the story here entirely.
Journalist Sam Quiñones, his latest book is titled Dreamland, The True Tale of America's Opiate Epidemic. Sam, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks very much for having me.